Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm is director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, and he joins us now from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Hello there, Professor Osterholm.
Hello there.
Could you please tell us what the particular epidemiological challenge presented by an outbreak such as SARS actually are?
Well, actually, there are several features that make a new disease like this very concerning. Number one is that we don't really have a good definitive test that at a moment's notice we can tell, does someone actually have SARS or do they not? And so we've had to develop what we call a clinical case definition, meaning that if somebody's had certain respiratory symptoms, they have the kind of exposure, meaning they've traveled to China or an area that might be affected, we call them a probable case of SARS. Now, many of those individuals will have respiratory illnesses due to totally other agents, and we'll eventually learn that when the 3 or 4 weeks later we can actually do a blood test that tells whether or not you are infected. That's a real concern because at the moment that we need to know in terms of notifying people who might have been exposed, not causing unnecessary fear or panic for those who really don't have SARS, we don't have that test yet. The second factor that makes this a difficult epidemiologic investigation is that the mode of transmission for this agent is clearly that of a respiratory component, meaning being in the same proximity to someone, breathing the air that they have just breathed and then shed their particular virus into that environment. We don't understand completely yet why, in some instances, certain individuals appeared to be very capable of transmitting to a lot of people, that term super shedder. That has made the epidemic a very real concern in the sense that if more people were super shedders, we might find this thing spreading very quickly. And then the other situations, though, we've seen individuals who were infected, clearly had SARS, we recovered the virus from them, and yet they have transmitted to very, very few people.
Is there anything that encourages you here as an epidemiologist about detecting it at what is still an early stage? Any possibility that it might be eradicated at this stage?
Well, as I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, and I don't think that I can really say much more than the fact that I feel as if we're really into the third line of a three-act play, and people are all asking, how was the play? We have a lot left to learn in terms of what we are going to see for transmission in communities. If, in fact, we can show that we were able to not only reduce transmission, but in essence eliminate transmission in Hanoi, as we've now entered our 18th day with no additional new cases, then that is very encouraging. On the other hand, as a respiratorily transmitted agent, like the SARS virus is, as an epidemiologist, even in this very earliest of stages, our best shot's going to be controlling it, never getting rid of it.
The flu pandemics of the early 20th century certainly spread without the aid of air travel. Does air travel complicate the spread of the virus?
Air travel, as well as what I would call our modern way of life, are two very critical aspects to this problem. Air travel, as we think of it between countries, is clearly an important issue. But today, we have migration of populations within countries that are on trains and other motor vehicles that didn't also happen 50 to 100 years ago. So it's not only the transmission across oceans and between countries, it's now the mixing within populations within a given country. The other piece that makes us very different today is that when you think about 1918 and the Spanish flu or swine flu, as it was then called, there were about 1.5 billion people on the face of the earth in 1918. Today, there are 6.2 billion people on the face of the earth. One out of every nine people who have ever lived in all the history of humankind are on the face of the earth today. And many of these people are concentrated in certain areas of the world, particularly the developing world countries. And so when you have a respiratory transmitted agent, like we see the SARS virus, the ability to quickly amplify that through people who live in horrible settings in the sense of the crowding and lack of sanitation poses very different problems. The potential for respiratory illnesses to move within countries and between countries is unprecedented as it is now.
So then I guess that you couldn't make a comparison about the seasons being effective, because with the early flu epidemics, there was the hope that when the seasons changed, the virus would be tamped down, and some people are talking about that being the case here as well.
As part of that analogy I used earlier of kind of the three-act play and rolling into the third line of it, that's one of the areas that we really have a lot to learn about, the seasonality. Is there going to be a seasonality to this particular viral infection? We have seen for most respiratory agents a clear demarcation between the winter kind of transmission season and the summer transmission season. That will be important to know. But remember, the other part of it is that when it's winter here in the northern hemisphere, it's summer in the southern hemisphere and vice versa. So while we're moving into the summer months here, it is the beginning of the flu season in the southern hemisphere. Now, grant you, the world's population is primarily above the equator, north of it, but we're still going to be watching very carefully what might be expected to be a problem south of the equator.
Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm is director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health.